Welcome to Cornerstone. We're glad you've joined us. Today, we'll be hearing from our lead pastor, Brent Burkhart. Listen in and be encouraged as we spend some time in God's Word together.
Hey, welcome. Thank you guys so much for coming out tonight. I don't know about you, but as 7 o'clock got closer and closer today, I found myself getting just more and more excited just to see your faces. It's kind of hard to see in the sun right here. Maybe need Dennis to come stand right in front of me. Or maybe we could all be Pentecostal tonight. If you hold your hands up, I don't know. But it's great seeing everybody here, seeing live faces instead of talking into a camera. It's a privilege to be able to do this tonight. I've never preached from a tractor trailer bed before, but I guess if Jesus can preach from fishing boats, this is kind of Texas version of that, I guess. So I think we're probably okay. I want to thank Dennis for what he said. Dennis has a great ministry. It's called Eyes on Me, and if you're not familiar with it, we look for an opportunity to tell you a little bit more about it in the coming weeks. But talk to Dennis. He's really doing a good job working in some of the rougher parts of Houston. And in case you're wondering what we want to do with that food, we will be incorporating that in our normal Obadiah project, which is happening a few weeks from now. But in the meantime, we're trying to target that food in the first place to some of the needy members in our church, and we've already funneled it in that direction. But even beyond that, feel free tonight, grab a box for your family, and then grab 2, 3, 4, or 5 other boxes, maybe just for some neighbors. This isn't just for people in need. This is for outreach purposes. And so, you know, if you have a good neighbor next door and you're like, hey, could you use a box of oranges and potatoes and onions? And it's a great way to connect and a great way to serve and bless others. And so be thinking right now, even while I'm talking, about maybe grabbing a box yourself and grabbing a few other boxes for people that you think you could be a blessing to. They're in the lobby. And like I said, just grab some on your way out, and hopefully we can be a blessing to other people. It's great being out here. I'm grateful for the breeze. It takes care of the mosquitoes and a little bit of the heat. And it's a little weird not being able to, like, shake hands and hug in person and do all the good stuff we normally do. There we go, right down there. Okay. You know, maybe waving's a little boring. Maybe we can come up with something a little more creative. Kind of, if you have ideas for, like, a cornerstone meeting or something like that, I don't know. Maybe we can all put our brains together and come up with something there. But, glad to be here. And tonight, I know you didn't come here to hear an hour-long sermon. We all just came probably just to see each other, because we haven't seen each other for a long time. You've seen my talking head on Facebook and YouTube for the last several weeks. But I do want to just spend a few minutes tonight just challenging you with some things that I've been thinking about kind of in the wake of this whole pandemic that we've been dealing with. And, you know, life has been anything but normal these last couple of months. But if you can take your mind back a couple of months and try to remember what it was like when it was normal before all this stuff hit, I think during normal times, most of us probably would have been inclined to complain that we are just way too busy, right? We have way too many things on our plate, and most of us would have said that we wished we had more time to tend to some of the really important things in life, like spending meaningful, unhurried time with God each morning. Sometimes that gets squeezed out in our busyness. Things like spending meaningful, unhurried time with our spouse or our children or the people that are dearest to us. Being able to spend meaningful time to just think and rest and read and breathe and exercise and play and enjoy hobbies and enjoy life. Some of the things that kind of nourish our souls that get squeezed out in the busy rat race of life. And many times in normal times, we wish we had more time to do these things, but most of us were just way too busy. And sometimes we think to ourselves, you know, if only God would bless me with maybe 2 or 3 extra hours in the day, right? A 26 or 27 hour day, then I could get my life in balance and my priorities in order, and that would bring it all into balance. But I wonder if that's really the case. I wonder if a lack of time really is the basis of our struggle. You know, it's interesting to go back about 100 years and see predictions that people were making about what life in our day and age would be like, especially technological advances. Pretty interesting to read that. Many of those predictions are outlandish and far-fetched. Some of them were pretty spot on. And frankly, some of the things that have happened in our lifetime, people 100 years ago never could have dreamed that they would have happened. But one thing that most futurists of the past agreed on was that advances in technology would make life easier and give people far more time in our day and age than they ever had back then. A well-known economist named John Maynard Keynes, for instance, predicted in 1930 that because of technological advances, by the time the 21st century rolled around, our time, the average work week would be reduced to 15 hours. He said, and I quote, "Thus, for the first time since his creation, man will be faced with his real, his permanent problem how to use his freedom from pressing economic cares, how to occupy all his leisure time, which science and compound interest will have won for him, to live wisely and agreeably and well. John Maynard Keynes predicted that the biggest problem that we would be facing in our day and age would be trying to figure out what we would do with all the extra time on our hands and all the extra money in our banks. Now, how many of you would say that? That's my biggest problem right there. I've got way too much time, way too much money, don't know what to do with it all, right? The reality is that despite all of our technological advances, maybe because of them, we're busier than ever, right? You see, as we know, technology is a double-edged sword. Yes, it enables us to do things more quickly, but it also enables us to do more things and to have more things. It has increased our capabilities, but with our increased capabilities come increased expectations and increased appetites. Think about it, cell phones and laptop computers, things which were created to increase our freedom and mobility, in reality, they've created sort of an electronic leash that binds us to our work 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, right? And we're working more than ever. And now we've added Zoom to the mix, right? Now we can invite our boss right into our bedrooms any time of the evening. Isn't that a great thing, right? And these kinds of technological advances have blurred the lines between life at work and life at home, between the weekday and the weekends. And we have to wonder, right, what happened to all this extra time and money that technology was supposed to afford us? Well, there's a Harvard economist named Julia Shore who found that our leisure time and our time at home is indeed shrinking, but that it's our choice. In a report, she said this, that a growing deficit in leisure time is being exchanged for a higher standard of living, that in turn, we have less time to enjoy. Instead of taking productivity gains since World War II and converting them into time off from the job, she found that we prefer to take the cash and hold on to the longer work week. Had productivity gains since World War II been translated into free time, Short concluded, we would only have to work a half a year. But, and here's the but, we'd have to accept a standard of living closer to 1948 than what we've become accustomed to today. You get what she's saying there? She's saying that John Maynard Keynes was absolutely right, that technology would buy us more time. It has. Think about it. The computer is far more efficient than those old typewriters. Anybody remember a typewriter, right? The washer and dryer is far more efficient than the washboard and the clothesline. Technology has given us more time, but it has also given us more choices and a higher standard of living. And rather than investing that extra time into our homes and our churches and our relationships, most Americans, many of us, have chosen instead to invest that time back into their jobs to maintain the ever-increased standard of living to which we've become accustomed, right? The fact is, we could have more time if we'd be content with less stuff. We could have more time if we didn't feel the need to avail ourselves of every activity and every opportunity that our newfound affluence affords us. But most of us simply can't bring ourselves to say no. We feel this compelling need to have more and to do more, and we just can't help ourselves. We are addicted to busyness every bit as much as an alcoholic is addicted to alcohol. In fact, that's not a bad analogy if you think about it. If you keep putting drinks in front of a serious diehard alcoholic, he'll just keep drinking and many times drink himself sick. And what is it that will allow somebody who's addicted like that to change? Well, more often than not, he's not going to be able to do it himself. It's going to require a disruption in life. It's going to require some intervention from the outside. It'll probably require that person be sidelined for a while in rehab while he can get away from the alcohol long enough to begin rebuilding his life, to establish healthier habits. Now, those kinds of interventions are painful, right? Rehab is hard. But on the other side of that season, that alcoholic has the opportunity to get a fresh start, to rebuild healthier habits and a healthier life. And you know, I think the same thing is true of our addiction to busyness. On our own, most of us will never voluntarily choose to clear the clutter from our calendars, right? To make time for what's really important. Most of us will just keep right on saying yes to every activity and every opportunity and every demand that comes across us, no matter how unhealthy or unbalanced it makes our life. It's just how we are. And so what has to happen sometimes is that God, in effect, has to step in and do an intervention. For instance, sometimes he may have to put us on our backs with some disease or maybe a heart attack so we can wake up and see that we need to take better care of our bodies. He may have to allow us to experience an emotional breakdown so that we can wake up and see the importance of taking better care of our souls and giving greater attention to our mental and spiritual health. He may have to allow us to experience a rupture in a relationship to help us see that we need to spend more time with our spouse or our children or our friends or those relationships that are dearest to us. You see, sometimes God has to do an intervention for us. Sometimes He has to take us out of commission and sort of put us on the sidelines for a short time to help us regain perspective and regain balance and reestablish healthy priorities. Now, these last few months, I've wondered if perhaps that may not be what God might not be doing during this whole quarantine thing. You know, it wouldn't be the first time. In fact, in the Old Testament, you can see a pretty clear example where God did a pretty significant intervention in the life of His people, the people of Israel. And I'm speaking of the time when He allowed them to be captured by the Babylonians and taken into exile for 70 years. Let me just give you a little bit of the backstory there. You know, of course, that in the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments, in fact, God commanded the Israelites to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. And that was the case on a number of levels. There was a weekly Sabbath that they were observed. God said, work 6 days, and on the seventh day, I want you to rest. On the seventh day, I want you to kick up your feet and sit back and enjoy the relationships that I've given you. Spend some time with family and friends, contemplating the blessings of God. Spend some time in worship. Quit working, quit laboring, and then for one day, just breathe a little bit and enjoy the fruit of your labor. What a gracious God to mandate that kind of one-day vacation out of 7 days, right? He commanded that to them. That was a precept in the Mosaic Law. But what was a precept for them is, at the very least, a principle for us, right? The principle of a Sabbath rest predates the Mosaic Law. In fact, it's grounded in the creation order itself. God has called on us to establish rhythms of rest, whereby we periodically step back and breathe and intentionally don't do anything so that we can enjoy each other and enjoy God and recharge for the week. And yet many of us, like the Israelites, we oftentimes tend to neglect that Sabbath. God gave them this weekly Sabbath so that they could enjoy Him and recharge. But He also gave them a Sabbath every 7 years. And this is something people forget sometimes. In Leviticus chapter 25, in an agrarian society, Israelites in times of old, they were all farmers. God said, for the first 6 years, I want you to work the land. I want you to cultivate, plow the soil, plant the seeds, harvest your crops. For the first 6 years, be busy little farmers. But on the seventh year, I want you to sit back and for one whole year, let the ground lie fallow. Let it rest, right? And you can reap whatever happens to spring up wild from the land, but there will be no official planting, no harvesting. You just sit back and let me provide for you. And I will provide for you. He said, if you'll trust me, during that year of rest, as the land lies fallow, I'll take care of you. I will meet your needs, right? And now we know, of course, that there are good scientific and agricultural reasons for that command, right? You work the land too many times over, you rob that soil of its nutrients, and you don't have good crops, right? So God knew what He was doing. He was doing it for their good and for the good of the land. But Israel famously decided not to obey that command, right? And you think about it, how difficult would it be to obey that command? It would be hard to sit back for a year, right, and trust God to meet your needs, right? Man, are we going to have enough food? It would be tough to sit around and watch all the surrounding nations continuing to move forward and plant and plow, and their economies are moving forward, and you're like, man, we're going to fall behind here. We got to keep up. And so what happened is Israel began just disobeying this seven-year Sabbath year after year after year. Now, God had warned them not to do that. He said, listen, I love you. This is for your good. And if you disregard me, I will have to step in and there will be consequences. This is what He said in Leviticus 26:2. He said, you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary, for I am the Lord. But if you do not obey me and do not carry out all these commandments, I will make the land desolate so that your enemies who settle in it will be appalled over it. You, however, I will scatter among the nations and will draw out a sword after you as your land becomes desolate and your cities become waste. Then the land will enjoy its Sabbaths all the days of the desolation, while you are in your enemy's land. Then the land will rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. All the days of its desolation it will observe the rest, which it did not observe on your Sabbaths while you were living in it. So God says, listen, if you disregard that Sabbath year, then I'm going to cause your enemies to come and take you captive. They'll take you into exile in a foreign land. And I will put you in a foreign land for the same number of years that you've neglected my Sabbath laws. For every year that you don't let the ground lie fallow, I'm going to take you out of your land so that land can have the rest that it deserves and so that you can have the rest that you deserve. Right? Well, again, sadly, Israel didn't pay heed to these warnings. They continued to disregard God's Sabbath laws year after year after year after year. And God sent them prophet after prophet to warn them of the consequences, but they didn't listen. And finally,
prophet Jeremiah said in Jeremiah 25:11, he said, listen, this whole land will be a desolation and a horror, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years because you have not obeyed the Sabbath laws. They'll be taken out of the land for 70 years, right? Now, if they were to be taken out of the land for 1 year, for every year they had neglected the Sabbaths, how many Sabbaths had they neglected? 70, right? And these Sabbaths took place every 7 years. So what does this tell us? It means that Israel had been disregarding the Sabbath laws for 490 years. I mean, talk about patience. God is a gracious God. For those of you that have a picture of God as sort of this cosmic cop in the sky ready to jump down your throat every time you blow it, right? God is a patient God. He didn't jump on them the first time they neglected it, or the second, or the third, or the fourth. He kept warning, he kept pleading, or the 68th, or the 69th. Finally, the 70th, after 490 years, God said, okay, all right, we've got to step in and do something here for your good and for the good of the land, right? And that's exactly what he did. Finally, God sent them away to Babylon. Again, for the good of the land, for their good. He wanted to give them and their land the rest that it so desperately needed. But God wasn't just interested in their physical rest, but also their spiritual renewal, right? Again, this intervention, this rehab in Babylon was difficult. It was hard. But on the other side of that period of captivity, God was going to give them a fresh start. It was his intention that not only would they be physically refreshed, but they would be spiritually renewed. In Jeremiah 29, which is a famous passage, but many times people don't think of it in this context, this is what God said. For thus says the Lord, when 70 years have been completed for Babylon, I will visit you and fulfill my good word to you to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. And I will restore your fortunes and will gather you from all the nations and from all the places where I have driven you, declares the Lord. And I will bring you back to the place from where I sent you into exile. Again, God says, listen, you are out of control, right? Your lives are completely out of balance. You are disregarding my best guidance for you and my commands to you. So, yeah, I intervened, right? I took you out of the land. There's a little season of rehab. But on the other side of this, Israel, guess what? There's hope. I'm going to give you a fresh start, a new beginning. Under the leadership of Ezra and Nehemiah, you know the story. The people did return. And it was their opportunity not only to rebuild the temple and the city walls, but also to begin slowly but surely rebuilding their spiritual lives. God was giving them a beautiful do-over, so to speak, a second chance. He was saying, listen, you disregarded my principles for leading a healthy, balanced, God-honoring life. You've driven yourselves into the ground, and you've even driven the ground into the ground. So I'm going to sideline you for a little while. I'm going to make it impossible for you to abuse yourselves and my gifts to you by taking those gifts away from you for a time. You know, again, I wonder if that might not be what God is doing during this current pandemic. You know, we who aren't very good at observing God's Sabbath rests, we who just keep adding more and more and more things to our lives, we who tend to neglect those things in our lives that are most important, the relationships that are dearest to us, we who frequently complain about a lack of time but really do nothing to change it, I kind of wonder, and I'm not a prophet, but I wonder if God finally said, okay, if you won't slow down, I'll slow you down. If you won't take anything off your calendars, I'll do that for you. If you insist on spending every waking hour at the office, I'll bring you home for a while. If you can't spend time with me because of a long morning commute, let's take that commute off the table, right? I'll give you a once-in-a-lifetime window of opportunity to get your life back in order, to reestablish healthy habits and healthy priorities. And you know what? I'm so grateful that some of you have seized that window of opportunity. As I've had opportunity to talk to many of you, yes, you've admitted these have been challenging times, right? Especially some of you that are homeschooling for the first time or trying to work at home with the kids. It's had its share of challenges, but there's been a silver lining to this whole thing, right? I know that some of you, as I've talked to you, you've used the cooler weather that we had, at least up until this weekend, to enjoy the outdoors more, to get out and exercise and to do some things in the lawn and get physically fit. That's something you don't often have time for. You've used that extra time in the mornings to establish some new spiritual disciplines, to reestablish that habit of spending time with God every morning in His Word and in prayer. Many of you have used your time at home to deepen your marriage and your family relationships. And as we've not been able to gather physically in the auditorium,
auditorium for worship, but instead you've gathered around the television set for worship with your families. You've used that as an opportunity to strengthen your spiritual leadership in the home with your children. You've used this time when our neighbors have been out and about like never before to reconnect with them and to get to know them and to show the love of Jesus to them. And listen, if you haven't taken advantage of this rare window of opportunity that God's given to us, guess what? It's not too late. It's probably going to be a while before things fully return to normal, right? And I would encourage each of us to use this season to get spiritually and emotionally and physically and relationally healthy. To tend to some of the things that, frankly, we just haven't had time to tend to in the past. And develop a plan so that when things do return to the way they were, we won't. We'll be different. And we'll choose to do things differently. Several years ago, I found myself in a very, very busy season. And I dreaded going to my inbox, my email box, because it was just packed full. It seemed like everybody had a question or a decision or a response that was required, and I was so busy I didn't have time to tend it all, and I didn't even want to get to it. And so I kind of pick it away at it day after day, but it was just overwhelming. And then one day my computer crashed and my Outlook file got completely corrupted, and I lost years of emails. And I tell you, that was the worst day of my life and the best day of my life, right? Because for the first time in my life, I mean, there was nothing I could do. There was no way I could. That was just taken off the table. Like I was bankruptcy, right? It was gone, right? And anybody that needed me, they'd have to email again, and I'd have a good excuse. Hey, sorry, I lost all those. It was just a refreshing. This burden had been lifted. You don't get many opportunities, right, like that when your slate is wiped clean. When you get kind of this open opportunity to really revisit and reestablish things from the ground up. But God, I think, has given us an opportunity like that right here, and I hope we'll seize on it. The sad thing is, when Israel went back to the land, read the book of Nehemiah. How long did it take before they started neglecting the Sabbath? Not long, right? They jumped right back into it. And that's my fear for us as well, is that when things begin to get back to normal, we'll go back to things that are normal, right? And we'll reestablish those same patterns that ultimately aren't good for us and aren't honoring to the Lord. And I pray that won't happen. I want to close tonight by reading an extended excerpt from a blog post that I follow. It's by Tim Challies, and it's a little long, but I think he says it probably better than I can. So let me just close with his challenge, which is very much along the lines of what we've been talking about here. He says, "It seems to me that as we ponder when and how we will emerge from our COVID-19 quarantines and lockdowns, we will have a rare chance at a kind of do-over. It is extremely unlikely that one day we will receive a society-wide, all-clear signal and emerge back into life as it was. More likely is an incremental approach where, over time, we can begin to restore some of the functions we have had to cease for a time. We will then have to decide when and if we return to each of these activities. And there's no better time than now to be reflective about what we want our lives to be. There's no better time than now to be prayerful about how we will keep our lives from going from too empty to too full. Before you go back to what is normal, what was normal, decide whether this is the normal you want. Take the do-over. One day, the gym will send an email to say it has reopened and you can go in again to work out. Today is the ideal time for you to assess whether you're actually using that gym membership and to decide whether it is serving you well. What else could you do with that time? What else could you do with that money? Don't go back just because the doors have opened. Go back because you've thoughtfully evaluated it and determine that it is important or necessary to your well-being. One day, that shared office space will open its doors again. One day, that organization will have its first post-lockdown meeting. One day, that club will begin to gather once more. Will you go as you did 2 months ago? Before you go back to what was normal, decide whether this is the normal you want. Take the do-over. Take the opportunity to assess, to evaluate, to carefully and prayerfully ponder the kind of life you want, kind of life you believe the Lord is calling you to live. On a family level, a time will come when your children's sports leagues will start up again, when their music teacher will call again, when a society convinced it needs to fill their every waking moment will once again offer to do just that. There's no...
Thanks for spending some time with us today. For further information about today's podcast or our church in general, please visit us at cornerstonecbc.org. That's cornerstonecbc.org. Thanks. See you next time.